guest line. Brianna writes for SB Nation, host of the Mike Rutherford Show in Louisville. That's Mike Rutherford. Mike, good afternoon, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing great, Mike. Appreciate the time. Let's start the game that has the most topic of conversation from yesterday. That's the end of the Creighton game, San Diego State. The foul at the end. What'd you make of that call? Was that the right decision, you think, by the officials?
I'm going to take the standard party line at this point, right, where it's the if you call it with 5 minutes to go in the first half, you have to call it at the end of the game. I don't like the way that it ended, but I understand that a foul is a foul. It just felt like it wasn't just a foul call. I thought the last minute of that game was such an unsatisfying end to what had been a really competitive game. You had Alexander's shot dancing all over the rim and not going down. You had the bizarre inbounds play, which kind of looked like a Creighton inbounds play, but it was San Diego State throwing it away to tie the game. You had, after the foul call and the one or two free throws made, you had the Shireman pass, which they have to review it for 15 minutes. Like, it just felt so weird to see Brian Dutcher get told that he's going to the Final Four for the first time in his career as he's drawing up a play on a whiteboard. The whole thing just felt so unsatisfying. But as far as the foul itself, yeah, it's a foul. You call it. I can't hate the call. But if he hadn't called it, I also don't think it was so obvious that it would be something that everybody was up in arms about this morning and everybody would be shouting about on all the sports radio shows. So I hate that it got called selfishly, but I also think it was a foul that I've got no problem with.
Mike, you saw those games there in Louisville. I don't go back to Friday night. San Diego State had the game exactly where they wanted it first half. Alabama comes out second half and – like a house on fire, and I think they get up 9, and most people are like, all right, Bama's got this thing under control. How did San Diego State, rally to even get to yesterday?
I mean, just the way they always play, tenacious defense. Also, I think Alabama helped them out considerably. It was a Bama team, even during that rally, they just kind of carried themselves as though this is our show. We're going to, order's going to be restored here. We're going to win this game. And when they got ahead, they stopped doing what had been working for them. They started settling for some outside shots. I know that's what San Diego State wants them to do. And against a team like that, San Diego State's held their four opponents in this tournament to 18.6% shooting from three, which is outrageous. Brandon Miller just wasn't all the way there. I don't know what was going on there. He goes 3 of 19. And SDSU was able to find something that worked for them offensively with Darian Jermel, which is kind of one of the weird things about their run here, is they're in the Final Four. Their best offensive player, Matt Bradley, has been not good at all. He could not hit the rim in any of the shots against Bama. Tramell got it going. Butler got it going a little bit yesterday. But in that Bama game, it felt like Alabama just got way too relaxed when they got that lead. And against a team like San Diego State that is never going to relent, you just cannot do that. I thought it was the first time this season where Bama really looked like a team that plays as many freshmen as they do. It was an immature moment that ended up potentially costing them their season.
Talking with Mike Rutherford here on the Afternoon Rush. Mike, for Jim Larrañaga and Miami, and Larrañaga obviously with George Mason all those years ago, now back Final Four, first time for Miami. What would it mean, a title for Jim Larrañaga, and how we look at him in the coaching history?
It would just be, I think if anybody's still denying how great Jim Larrañaga is, this would be a way for them to have no other pivot, nothing to turn to, because Larrañaga, I mean, 17 years to the day that he takes George Mason to a Final Four, he goes there with Miami. And in my book, the man's a Hall of Famer. And if anybody's asking, show your work, give me some evidence, he took George Mason to a Final Four and he took Miami to a Final Four. And I think it's all you really had to say. George Mason had never won a tournament game before Larrañaga got there. Miami had been to one Sweet 16 before Larrañaga got there. They've been to four now. And the biggest thing to me, and I think the thing that I'd like to see get talked about more this week, is Miami was the biggest victim in that whole FBI deal. If you remember, they come out there with that initial indictment in the fall of 2017. Miami's all over the place. They're all, Coach 1, Coach 2, Larrañaga's in it. They're talking about Nasir Little and the recruitment there. And then it turns out that this guy who had been telling people that he was giving money to Miami players and acting on behalf of Larrañaga was just keeping the money for himself. And Larrañaga really didn't know any of this was going on. The FBI, a few months later, steps up and says, whoops, our bad, takes Miami out of the superseding indictment, but the damage is done. Their recruiting stalled. All the momentum that Larrañaga built in that program comes to a halt. They have three really bad seasons in a row, two back-to-back losing seasons. Laronega goes from the king of Coral Gables to a guy who's on the hot seat, and yet now here he is going to a regional final 2 years ago for the first time at Miami and now a Final Four for the first time at Miami. He's the real deal. He is, without question to me, the most underrated coach in all of college basketball.
So, Mike, I saw a lot of this last night after the game. ACC pundits saying, hey, look, we told you the ACC wasn't as bad as people tried to say it was, and now you've got Miami in the Final Four. Obviously, you follow the ACC there in Louisville, Mike. We follow it here in Charlotte. Is that justification now that Miami's in the Final Four that maybe people were wrong about the ACC all year?
As much as I'd like to say yes, I can't do it. I mean, you look at the rest of the conference didn't exactly cover itself in glory in this tournament. Virginia gets knocked out in the first round by Furman. Duke seems to have a dream draw, and they play horribly against Tennessee. It was a conference that was down. If you wanted to thump your chest a little bit last year, I think that was maybe more warranted. I think you could easily have said, yeah, the bottom of the conference was down, but we still had some great talent. We still had some great teams. Look at what Carolina did when they finally realized their potential. Duke, the same thing. Miami goes, you had three of the teams in the Elite Eight. This year, everybody knew Miami was a team that was capable of making a run in the tournament because they had such great guards. And those great guards, as well as North Shadowmere, just started playing tremendously. I mean, they've been terrific this entire run. But I don't think that one run justifies, an entire conference. I mean, I don't think people are sitting there talking about how the Mountain West deserved 7 bids last year because of what San Diego State is doing right now. The Mountain West had lost 12 straight games in the NCAA tournament before San Diego State won on the opening Friday here. And let's not forget, Miami, Drake had them dead to rights in the first round. So we were very close from a disastrous NCAA tournament for the ACC. And it just goes to show these narratives, they're razor thin. You're one or two dribbles away from people talking in absolutes in an entirely different direction. So as much as I'd like to sit here and say, I told you guys, the ACC is fantastic, I'm not going to beat that drum.
Talking College Hoops with Mike Rutherford. Mike, FAU team I saw here in Charlotte play against the Charlotte 49ers and paid attention to Conference USA. I knew they were a good team. Did not think we'd be sitting here talking about them in the Final Four. How has this Owl team been able to pull this off?
Yeah, speaking of razor-thin margins in this tournament, Florida Atlantic is dead against Memphis in that first-round game, and it takes Memphis doing some kind of bonehead things and also a questionable call in the final minute for FAU to advance in that game. And they take advantage of their draw. They beat Fairleigh Dickinson there and get a little bit hot. I mean, Florida Atlantic, they're one of the most fun teams to watch in this NCAA tournament because of the way that they play. They're freewheeling. They get up and down. They're a fantastic offensive team. They play basically four guards with the big man Golden, who's 7'1" in the middle. They've been good all year. I mean, it's crazy to talk about a team in terms of, Cinderella story. And, they just – one of the greatest upsets in all of college basketball. They're 35-3. They've won a ton of games. When you win 35 games, I don't care what conference you're playing in, you can hoop. And these guys have been terrific all tournament long. I think they're absolutely a live shot against San Diego State. I'm not sure that they can beat either UConn or Miami on Monday. But, the way they play, if they cut down on the turnovers, they definitely have a shot. They turned the ball over 22 times against Kansas State and still were able to win that game because their offense is just so good. I think Dusty May is the real deal. I think Jonathan Smith is the real deal as a player. I like FAU a lot. I think they're absolutely a live shot against SDSU Saturday night.
Mike, the one team we've not talked about, to me, probably the most dominating of these four teams that we've seen so far is UConn. I mean, they absolutely dismantled Gonzaga Saturday night. Are they better than you even thought they were?
Yeah, and I picked them to win the tournament 2 weeks ago. They were the one thing that I've kind of gotten right about this tournament was I picked UConn to win it all, and it's looking like they are the real deal. I mean, winning all four of their games by 15 points or more, not really getting an easy break with the draw, either playing a dangerous Arkansas team in the Sweet 16 and then a Gonzaga team that everybody was talking about flying under the radar and Drew Timmy and all this and just dismantling them. They're also playing their best basketball at the right time. I think you have to have star guards step up and carry you a little bit in March. Every team that wins the national title has a guard who's steering the ship, and Jordan Hawkins has done that. He's gotten hot from the outside. It helps to have Tristan Newton playing the way he's playing. Andre Jackson was a guy that people talked about as a liability for them just a couple of months ago because of his limited offensive game. He played that point forward role to perfection for them. He had an 8-9-10 game for them against Gonzaga, with 10 being the assist number. And then in the middle, Adama Sanogo has been as good as you want him to be. He's a dominant force. He is a difference maker in this Final Four because I don't think any of the other three teams left standing have a player like him who have his size and his ability. He should give them a gigantic advantage. And they just, I mean, they're a cohesive defensive unit right now. They've really stepped up on that end. They blitz every, I mean, they look like a machine right now. I think they're the best team in this tournament from the start. I think they're the best team standing right now. And I'll be surprised if they don't win two more games and cut down the nets in Houston a week from tonight.
Mike Rutherford here on the Afternoon Rush. And Mike, last thing, just we look here at this Final Four. I mean, I'm intrigued by it, but how do you think, you know, fans just in general look at a Final Four with, you can go UConn, obviously, a team that's been there, done that, but the other three, not quite maybe the same attractiveness level that we'll have here in this Final Four?
Yeah, I mean, it's a... I've been calling it a bizarro Final Four, which is kind of what I wanted. I think it's reflective of this season, which is a good thing. I understand the desire to have a Final Four that is, you know, top seeded blue bloods, slugging it out, and, you know, the best of the best, the sport's biggest stage. But I also think that every now and then it's refreshing to get something like this. TV ratings may not be great, and non-college basketball diehards may not like it. But I think that you have to remember part of the big allure of this event lies with the unpredictability of it and the endless possibilities when you stare at that bracket after Selection Sunday. And that allure loses a little bit of its luster if the final story every single year is, you know, number one North Carolina versus number Kansas, number one Kansas or something like that. You know, Final Fours like this one, they remind us that this is one of the really few American sports where something like this can happen, you know, where anything really is possible. And Final Fours like this, they keep us on our toes. So I like to embrace it when it happens. It's probably going to be back to the big boys next year. That's the way that it goes. But just having, you know, a Final Four for the first time without any top three seeds, I think it's fun. And I think you should embrace it. It's part of this tournament. It's not going to happen every year. I'm all about it. I mean, San Diego State, Florida Atlantic playing for a national title, it's great. I think it's super fun. And I'm definitely looking forward to this weekend in Houston.
He's on Twitter at Card Chronicle. That's Mike Rutherford, SB Nation, the Mike Rutherford Show in Louisville. Mike, appreciate the time here in Charlotte. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thank you. There you go. Great stuff with Mike. We'll take a timeout. More to come. We continue here. It's a Monday edition of the Afternoon Rush.